is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Liz Peek, writes a column at The Hill and at Fox News, much on Fox Business, to comment on the economy. Thank you very much. The recovery in place. In fact, our recovery is so strong that we have a headline in London where the IMF is predicting that the United Kingdom, remember Brexit, is going to grow at 7%. So what we're looking at here is a worldwide recovery in pieces. And we need to examine those pieces because there is an unanswered question. And I learned from a new book about the debate for many decades between Paul Samuelson, the Nobel laureate distinguished economist, and Milton Friedman, the Nobel laureate distinguished economist. You're never sure when inflation is real or a false signal until it's upon you and it's too late. Also, you're never absolutely sure that the president is going to listen to you, though you are a Nobel laureate and trying to give him the best advice you know. You're never sure. This goes back all the way at least to the Second War and a man named John Maynard Keynes. Here we are, one more time. Liz, a very good evening to you. The headlines in the Wall Street Journal. You and I don't anticipate this. We just go to the journal while we're talking. U.S. home price growth rose to record in May. I mentioned that there is trouble in the Chinese stock market, but what we really care about is trouble here. I see no interruption in the burst of enthusiasm for American companies that are reporting good profits in this recovery. However, there is the shadow of inflation. We've talked about it often. You write about it routinely in your columns. What is your present understanding of Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Board, and the concern about inflation? Are they still committing everything to nothing until 2022-2023? We stay at zero rates. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think that the numbers are sufficiently worrisome. And in particular, the comments from companies that are reporting earnings are sufficiently alarming. That Powell has got to start talking about tapering probably in September. I would think, my expectation is by the end of the year, they'll definitely have a plan in place. They will have given people plenty of notice that they will stop buying $120 billion worth of bonds every month. And frankly, that house price number that you just mentioned, which is stunningly big, is a reason for that. I mean, they are buying $120 billion worth of bonds. $30 billion of that is mortgage-backed bonds. I have no idea why the Fed thinks that the mortgage market needs more shoring up when you've got basically zero interest rates and house prices are going through the roof. That does not help consumers. It certainly helps consumers to have cheap credit, no question. But the truth is there's too much credit out there and house prices are on fire. What's worrisome a little bit because of the headline risk, if you will, is that the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is heavily weighted to certain odd things like used cars. And we've seen that used car prices went up shockingly fast in the early part of this year. And that really drove consumer prices higher. But it's also very much weighted towards housing, not the price of houses, but the imputed price of housing. And they take things like the cost of houses into account and also rents. Rents went up, I believe, 7% or something in the latest tally. So I think that CPI number is going to be hot, and people are going to be surprised on the upside by how big it is the next time we see it, because housing will start to really impact the numbers. Now, other things like gasoline prices probably won't increase as much as it has been, because oil prices have come down a little bit. There are many, many components of inflation, but here's what's the bottom line, in my view. Right now, the Fed, as I mentioned, is continuing to stoke inflation, in my view, by just so much cheap money. Their balance sheet combined with the ECB balance sheet is something like $8 trillion higher than it was a year ago. The Fed's balance sheet is about 30% of GDP. Compare that back to, I think in 2009, it was something like 15% of GDP. And the economy was collapsing then. It's surging now. There just isn't any explanation for this or any excuse for continuing to pour gasoline on this very volcanic economy that we have. So I think there's too much money chasing too few goods. We see it in every kind of commodity and production of everything that we're talking about, that the PMI, big company, the purchasing manager indicator for prices was over 70, which is a hugely high reading. Today, GE warned in their earnings statement about how they're just seeing inflation everywhere, and they're trying to combat it with cutting costs, but also with raising prices. And you just hear enough of this, and you're pretty convinced it's really throughout the whole economy. This is, in other words, the argument from the Fed and from the White House has been, well, you know, we have an opening up, and so airlines, which were discounting fares a year ago, now are increasing fares. So this is a one-time event. This is, the word was transitory. Remember, everything was transitory. Interestingly, the White House has now dropped that. They've changed their messaging because, frankly, nobody knows if it's transitory, and no one really knew what to make of that comment anyway. But I think what we're seeing is it certainly is moved beyond the one-time startup impact, and now it is moving through the economy. And forgive me adding one more thing. The thing we should be looking at, the element that we have to watch very, very closely, is wages. Because when wages start to go up and prices start to go up, you get into this vicious circle of laborers, workers saying, hey, we need a raise because the price of my car just went up 10%, price of gasoline, whatever. And you get into this cycle. Friday, there's a very important report coming out on wages and wage inflation, and that will be watched very closely. I think we're going to be surprised again at how quickly wages are going up.
CNBC gives us this headline, and I need an interpretation because it sure looks like inflation to me. Companies from Unilever to Conagra warn of price hike lags in offsetting inflation. Inflation looms large over this earnings season, and while some companies are confident price hikes can fully offset rising costs, others warn it will take some time to catch up. Translation, does that mean they're telling us that they're so far behind in the costs of their raw materials that they can't do it all at once, that they're going to have to do it over time, so that we'll see inflation into 22 for simple items like Dove soap?
Yeah, I think there is some of that. I think you're seeing companies trying to, like GE, again, trying to sort of deal with higher costs. If you look at the commodities index, the global commodities index, the CRB commodities index, it hasn't come down. I mean, there are some commodities which peaked and are now way off their highs, like lumber, but they're still above where they were. And overall, costs of almost all ingredients have gone up, and not all companies have wanted to raise prices. So their margins are getting a little bit squeezed, and so they will raise prices. So to your point, yes, it's not over. It's not transitory. We're going to continue to see this, I think, through next year, I would imagine, because we're one thing you and I have talked about before, inventories are so low. Even if you saw right now a little wobble in end demand, and let's say, for example, the new concerns about the Delta variant and masking and so forth, and the CDC coming out and saying, well, maybe you should go back to wearing masks. If that begins to keep people from going out and shopping, and you get a little wobble in the end demand, it really won't impact, I don't think, production or manufacturing much early on, because companies are way behind on inventories. They need to stock shelves even if the final demand begins to taper off a little bit. Now, will they continue to do that? Yeah, I think they will, because everyone has learned that this just-in-time inventory right now, if you're a shirt manufacturer and you can't get buttons, you literally cannot get them. If you all of a sudden can access a shipment of buttons, you're going to go ahead and take them no matter what. So I think there's a lot of momentum here in the economy and in prices.
The markets, Liz, I know that it's not integral to the larger story of inflation. Markets go up and down. But you have said the wealth effect contributes to the consumption of goods, contributes to the GDP. So I puzzle about the markets right now, because there is what you could safely say a massacre of Chinese stocks listed in America. Massacre.
Yeah.
The word dumping is inadequate. And it's a direct result of what you could say, mysterious decisions made in Beijing, that capitalism is not acceptable unless we command every aspect of a company's profits. It started with Didi, the ride-sharing company, but it's now spread into a generalized threat that all IPOs in future might have to be in Hong Kong, which we control, says the CCP, and Shanghai, which we control. In addition, we no longer have confidence that you can get your money back if you've invested in these Chinese stocks. Is that integrated into our understanding of our wealth, or are people treating this as a separate issue that has to do with the well-known fact that the Chinese are bad actors when it comes to capitalism?
Well, I think it is sort of a segment of the market that, you know, probably people aren't that focused on. You're completely right that they're getting slammed. And frankly, I think it raises a lot of interesting questions. I mean, to me, it is another symptom of Xi Jinping's arrogance. And I think that's what it is right now, that he commands everything in the country. Everything is under his control. He doesn't want any data leaking out of the country that might be helpful to U.S. companies or U.S. intelligence or whatever. But it's almost like a finger in the eye of the West to have pulled the plug on a big, huge Chinese company raising money in the West. And frankly, I think it's incredibly counterproductive because the last five-year plan from China emphasized the need for foreign investment. Now, maybe they changed their mind, but I don't think so. And what better way to squelch foreign investment coming into your country than, A, the belligerence you're seeing in Hong Kong and the total kind of crackdown on Hong Kong's liberty and freedoms, and, B, this kind of flagrant manipulation of stock prices and values trading on foreign markets. I think if investors have got to become, what's the reaction to that? I think you become unbelievably skittish and wary, and that's what you're seeing. Why do you want to own Chinese stocks? Aren't there companies in America, companies in Europe, Latin America, wherever, that have the same kind of growth potential? I think the answer is a lot of alternatives. So, you know, right now, I think the risk reward in Chinese stocks is looking pretty bad.
I'm speaking with Liz Peek, and we've been focusing on monetary policy. What will the Federal Reserve Board do in the next year or 2 years to affect the recovery from the pandemic, if we're recovering from the pandemic? That is not a certainty. It sure looks that way, but we're going to turn to fiscal policy, taxes, because Big Pharma, according to the Wall Street Journal, is pushing back on the Biden administration's emphasis on global taxes, global minimum taxes, and its rounding up of cooperation with other countries in the world. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.